morning and welcome to another edition of On the Money, the Certified Financial Group. We're here live with Joe Burt and Harry Stoudemire. I hope I
you
know
got that.
Very nice.
You got
it,
baby. How's your Memorial Day weekend going so far?
So far, so good. It looks like we're not getting any rain until late this afternoon, so you'll be able to get the round of golf.
I hope so. We're going to bolt out of here and try to get 18 in real quick.
What are you playing?
Legacy of the Heath of Aliqua Lakes.
Very good. Well, Harry and I are here this morning to answer any questions that might be on your mind regarding your personal finances. As we like to say, we are your financial body shop. We go through life getting dinged and scratched, and we wake up at age 55 and find out we got some body work to do on our financial plan. So we're here to answer those questions. We brought out the Bondo this morning, and we can answer any questions that you might have regarding your stocks or bonds or decisions that you're trying to make around a 401k, an IRA, a reverse mortgage, life insurance, annuities, all that and more. And the good news for you is we are live and the telephone lines are absolutely wide open. So if you have any questions that you've been thinking about, something you want to get an answer to this morning, just give us a call. Our number here is 844-220-0965. That's 844-220-0965. And the next text line is also wide open. You can text us at 21232. That's 21232. So, Harry, what did you come across this week that's interesting?
Well, several things, Joe. As we as we're heading into, can you believe it's almost June?
I can't believe it. I cannot believe it.
It is amazing where this year has gone. But as we're getting into the summer, I know personally I'm doing a lot of updates to financial planning, and one of the things that we come across as financial planners is one of the things we do, Joe and I and the other financial planners at the office, is we do a fee-based financial planning. Now, that doesn't mean wealth management. It doesn't mean we're going to move around your mutual funds and invest your assets. This means finding out where you are today and where you need to be in a year and 5 years and 10 years and 20 years, and what are you going to leave the kids or the grandkids. And part of that, I've had folks say, well, how do you know what's going to happen in 10 years or 15 years? And the answer is we don't. However, if we establish a roadmap today and we follow that roadmap, there are going to be roadblocks in that roadmap.
Detours, as we call
them. Detours.
Right.
And the important thing is that we then are able to make those adjustments as we go along. And one of the adjustments we talked about this last Tuesday in our planner meeting is making sure that our plans are accurate. And part of that is, we know the Feds are in a rising interest rate environment.
Right.
And they've already started, and we'll probably see a couple more this year. So if you have debt, and this is specifically what I want to talk about this morning, is if you have debt and you have an adjustable rate mortgage or a home equity line of credit, or maybe you have student loans that are adjustable, or credit cards, you're debt-ridden with credit cards, this is a time that you need to be aware. Because we are, as financial planners, we'll go in and adjust the interest rate that may be charged. But this is a silent killer. If you're an adjustable rate mortgage and you have the ability to convert perhaps to a fixed, this might be the time you want to look at doing that. Because, if you're used to paying a 4% on your mortgage or 4.5% on your mortgage, the next thing you know, you're paying 6 or 7, do the math on a $300,000 mortgage. That can get quite pricey.
Yep.
Same with your credit cards. If you have a lot of credit cards, they can sneak up on you. You may be paying 8 or 9. Next thing you know, you're paying 12 or 13. I might suggest a phone call to the credit card companies, just to make sure that you understand their policy and, are rates going up. And sometimes you can barter with them, and sometimes a phone call will save you a couple bucks there. So be aware, in a rising interest rate environment, be aware as you go through life. It can be a silent killer, and it sounds like it's pennies, but it adds up to many, many thousands of dollars.
It adds up over time, yeah. You're very, very well said, Harry. The key is, if you plan on living in the home for a period of a year, unless you're going to, you're going to leave the house, you're going to sell, do something that doesn't make any sense to do it. But if this is the house that you plan to live in for foreseeable years, you definitely want to lock in today's rates, because we're probably not going to see these rates again for a long time.
I agree.
So you never know. Yeah, because it does impact, as you said, your overall financial security. As those interest rates continue to rise and you bleed off those interest payments, it does affect your ability to fund your 401k, your IRA, and to pay the bills, because you're paying it out in interest. So, yeah, you want to look at that. So once again, folks, our lines are absolutely wide open this morning. If you had any questions about anything financial that's on your mind, Harry and I are here to take your questions. There's no question that we probably haven't heard. If we don't have the answers, we know where to find them. We'll have to get back to you perhaps off the air. But our number here this morning is 844-220-0965. That's 844-220-0965. And the text line also is absolutely wide open. That's 212-32-212-32. So,
yeah.
So here we are. You and me, Harry.
What do you have in front? I'm seeing the word Bitcoin.
Bitcoin has made a lot of news in recent times, when it jumped from 2,000 to 20,000. Now it's back around 8,000. And we get questions, and I'm sure you get questions from your clients as well. You know, how do I get in on this thing? And our feeling is, frankly, it's a speculative play. It's not anything to build your financial future around. I call it beanie babies with a cell phone. I mean, that's basically what you have going on, is pure speculation. And we don't recommend it as a long-term investment strategy. If you want to play with it, fine, but certainly don't bet the house on it. And it's a very, very, and there's been a lot of scandals about these cryptocurrencies that are popping up all over the place. People are raising money and then the money disappears. So it's a wild west out there. And now governments and government entities are beginning to clamp down on regulating them, and who knows where all this will fall out. So blockchain idea is a great idea, but the Bitcoin, it's making it a long-term currency, still has a way to go, and we're in the early, very, very early stages of something that might be viable in the years to come. But getting in the early stages mean that you know, you have a chance to make a lot of money, you also have a chance to lose a lot of money if you catch it the wrong way.
So exactly what Bitcoin is, just another currency. Correct.
It,
I mean, it's a way of paying.
It's electronic currency is all it is.
In its own little world.
Yep.
I mean, I'll give you 4 bitcoins for 2 bitcoins. I mean,
you'll give me 4 bitcoins for my car, and then I have to take those 4 bitcoins and turn them into currency, because there are exchanges that will then give you cash. But depending on what the exchange rate is, or you have to find somebody else who'll take your bitcoins and exchange you for your groceries or whatever it might be. So, yeah, the challenge is, I think it's being used by the underworld, so to speak, as a way to move money around or to pay for commodities that you normally wouldn't want to have cash for. So it's a coming thing. You know, the electronic world is opening up all kinds of opportunities and also all kinds of dangers. So we don't recommend it for clients, although we've had calls in the past that people have disparaged us because we don't support it. But that's not our philosophy.
Yeah, I've had clients call and say, would you buy that? And I say, I'd rather not, but if you want to open up an investment account yourself, because I certainly don't want to be responsible for that investment to go away. And this is one of those investments that could disappear.
Theoretically. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, if you catch it at the wrong time, or one of these startup opportunities, the cryptocurrencies, where you get in on the ground floor, and it runs up, if you get in on the ground floor and you get out at the right time, you're going to make money. But if you get in when it's rising and then it drops, like how many people bought Bitcoin when it was $18,000 and today is $8,000, you know, and you're wondering, oh, what happened? I thought it was going to go to $40,000. Everybody says it's going to double. And so it's, once again, it's very, very speculative. It's not anything to build your retirement on. It's like buying a lottery ticket. You got to be in the right, you got the right numbers in the right place at the right time. We don't support it. So yeah, there's always things that come down the pike. I mean, just look at, all you have to do is turn on the TV now, and everybody's touting silver as the next great thing. You know, it's half the price of what it used to be. There's the time to get in. You don't necessarily hear the gold commercials anymore. Now's the time to buy silver. And there's always something that'll want to get your attention. And the thing that really disturbs me is that these folks that tout those kinds of investments are not regulated like you and I are. You know, we can't tout rates of return on investments. We can't say it's only half the price, it's going to double. We have experts to say this is going to do this, this will do that. And those folks that tout this kind of stuff can get away with a lot of things, and they oftentimes catch the unsuspecting people that catch this for the very first time or want to, you know, take a gamble, if you will. And sometimes it pays off, but many times you're left holding the bag, so to speak.
And I think if you want, and we do have clients that are very interested in commodities and want to get into that arena. And many times we're asked, you know, will we actually buy gold bullion and buy the hard asset, if you will? And that's something that I typically have stayed away from. I don't know if you have, Joe, in your practice. In mine, I have. And I mean, if commodities is a is an area that a client may request, I typically do it through a good qualified mutual fund that may buy gold and silver and aluminum and all the different maybe precious metals, and maybe make that a very, very, very small piece of the portfolio versus buying the actual gold bullion, if you will, for store. Then you have to store it, and there's a lot involved with that.
Right. As you probably know, though, there's some of the firms that we work with will actually buy the bullion for you for 2% over spot and hold it for you at 1% per year. That's a way to actually hold the bullion, or you actually you don't hold it. They will hold it for you in reserve. But if you want to actually, and that's a better way to buy it, instead of one of these things that you see on TV is they're promoting coins.
Mm.
That's one of the worst ways, specifically the numismatic coins, you know, the collector's coins, because you have to really be an expert in that arena to be sure you don't get burned. But they, you know, they tout them as, you know, this is a rare whatever, 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 and it's, you know, it's a good price, it's a great coin, it's a collector, and yada, yada, yada. And then you find out that you really overpaid for it when you go to sell it. So you got to be careful out there. It is a jungle, so to speak.
It is a jungle.
It is a literal jungle. You had a text that you had or something that you
I did. I had a text message question that came in, and it basically reads like this. My wife and I are retired, and in our early 60s, we have 80% of our assets in qualified accounts, and that would be IRAs, 401ks, Roths, things of that sort. What is the best withdrawal solution that you recommend pulling money out of the qualified or the non-qualified account? And I find this interesting. Everybody has opinions, and Joe and I discussed this a little bit this morning, and we have a little bit of differing views. There are many schools of thought. This client that sent me this email happened to be retired very early and decided to go to Sanibel and just do it up.
There you go.
And he and his wife are doing very, very well. However, we're getting into a situation for them, they're going to have to wait because they're not quite 59 and a half in certain situations. But the school of thought for many is that you leave your tax-deferred money absolutely alone until you absolutely have to take it, and that is at 70 and a half. And pull all your monies from your taxable account, and then you know be efficient when you're pulling money to try to keep your tax as minimal as possible. And then there's a school of thought that says, well, if you leave your qualified money alone, and it grows and grows and grows, and now you have this big wad of money in your retirement account, and you now are 70 and a half, you have to take your RMD, and you're subject yourself to a substantial tax, potential large tax bill moving forward at age 70 and a half. So there are two schools of thought. So we're about to go to break here, and Joe and I will discuss what he does and what I do, and I think we might have a little differing opinion, but that's always healthy.
So once again, if you have any questions, give us a call at 844-220-0965. That's 844-220-0965. Or the text line is 21232. That's 21232.
Welcome back to On the Money, the Certified Financial Group, and we're still here with Joe and Bert and Joe Bert and Harry. And Harry, we left off on an email. Did you want to continue on that?
Yeah, let's kind of refresh for those that may have just joined us. Right before we went on the break, we had an email question that had come in, and it was from actually a client of mine that is getting to the point of needing to pull funds from their assets. They decided to retire, move down to Sanibel, and live the beach life. They're fairly young, but they've been extremely good savers. And so I did a financial plan for them and sort of blessed it and said, sure. And they had enough assets to live for a year or so, and now it's time to tap into the investment savings part of their plan. And the question was, do we pull from our qualified money or our non-qualified money? And my point before the break was that there are two schools of thought. Some say leave your qualified money alone. Don't touch it. Pull from your non-qualified. Again, depending on the amounts. And the other school of thought says, you know, go ahead and start pulling from a little bit of both, because if you avoid pulling money out of the qualified account at 70.5, that monster could generate some big tax problems for you, depending on your tax bracket. And so that was the question. And Joe, your opinion of that is?
My opinion is what you look at is what your tax situation is going to be for the year. And if you are going to be in a relatively low tax bracket, it makes sense to perhaps do some Roth conversions with some of those funds. And if you need to spend the money, of course, spend it. If you're in a higher tax bracket, my philosophy is just don't pay that tax today, because every dollar that you take out is going to be taxed at the highest rate. Whereas your non-qualified money, some of that is going to be taxed at a favorable rate, capital gains and so forth, and be taxed at a lesser rate. So depending on your individual tax bracket, the time of withdrawals is really what you want to look at.
So, but however, if 80% of their money is qualified and 20% is non-qualified, and let's assume they're in their, let's assume they're 60 years old, 62 years old, they're young.
But
depleting, let's assume that they don't have enough money in their non-qualified, and they deplete all their assets at 65 or 70 in the non-qualified.
Then they start withdrawing to their qualified, because at least it was growing a lot faster because it wasn't taxed along the way.
So now for the next 20-some years, you're pulling strictly out of qualified, paying that. I'm of a different opinion. I tend to...
Let's run the numbers next week.
Yeah, I think we will. That's why I tend to think that you don't want to deplete your entire non-qualified assets just in case you need that check for that big check for... They're in Sanibel, hurricane.
Gotcha.
I
understand.
Et cetera.
I hear you. My philosophy has always been is defer the taxes for as long as you can, depending on your tax bracket. This way that pile grows a lot bigger, so you have to pay taxes on a bigger pile, but at least the pile is bigger. So it's two ways to look at it. We'll run the numbers next week, and we'll get back to you.
I think that's a great way to go. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, there's you know, always two schools of thought on a lot of financial planning subjects, and that's why the benefits, I think, of working with a group as we have of 11, 12 certified financial planners that get together every week and brainstorm and come up with ideas. And we learn something from each other every week.
Every week, which is a
great thing for me after all these years, still be able to learn something from y'all. So it's been great. So once again, our lines are absolutely wide open. 844-220-0965. That's 844-220-0965. Or our text machine is 21232. That's 21232. So give us a call or give us a text. We're here to answer questions that you might have. So this week you had an interesting case, a client you've been working with for some time, I guess, and showed him a way to perhaps to turn an old asset into a very lively asset.
Very, very interesting situation. And again, we're up against the news here in just a minute, but I'll kind of set the table and then we'll get back to it on the other side. Situation where a gentleman had again, I'm not going to get specific, but had a substantial amount of money in a life insurance policy that he bought many, many, many years. And we were able to take a cash value situation and turn it into an income situation because he didn't need the life insurance. And we'll talk a little bit about how that happened, as we go to break and, we come back on the other side. But he was very surprised because he thought he had to cash this life insurance policy in and take the money, but we were able to save him several thousands of dollars in taxes, obviously, and turn this into a guaranteed income stream, not only for his life, but also for his wife's life.
Wow, interesting case.
So it worked out very, very nicely, and he's obviously very pleased. So
you took a what we call an underperforming asset and turned it into something that he's able to use now to provide him and his spouse a guaranteed income.
Yeah, and life changes. I mean, this back when he was a young father and he had a family at home, life insurance was very important.
Sure.
And he happened to purchase a insurance policy and was very diligent about funding it. And it grew substantial over, I mean, he bought it in 1986.
Whoa.
And it grew very, very substantial, and he had this asset and didn't need the life insurance, and so we ended up turning it into an income stream. We'll talk about that at the end of, or at the other side of the half hour.
And welcome back to the second half of On the Money, the Certified Financial Group. We're here live with Joe and Harry, and this show is dragging by. I was a little nervous, but you guys make me feel comfortable.
Oh, you're doing fine, Carlton. Carlton's filling in today for Kyle, who's here every Saturday, and he's taking a little break, so we've got Carlton in here. And
you're lucky, Carlton. You got the A-team today.
So, but anyway,
let's get back to your case here.
Yes. Yeah, so this individual back in 1986 bought a whole life insurance policy. It wasn't a term; it was a whole life, and funded it. And it's grown and grown and grown, and has done quite well. Well, he's decided to retire, and so he's got this large asset that he had no clue how we could perhaps turn that into income. And again, being that it was a life insurance policy, we had some restrictions, but ultimately what we ended up doing is taking the cash value and 1035-ing, and for those of you that don't know, 1035 exchange is a tax-free exchange from a life insurance cash value program into an annuity. Yes, I said it, an annuity.
Annuity.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it was almost a no-brainer in that the company that we happened to select has a wonderful, wonderful income generator that is guaranteed for his life as well as his wife's life. So it's really acting like a pension, and it can't go down regardless of what the market does. And if the market does well, there will be bonus checks on top of his guaranteed income. And ultimately, there's also cash that can accumulate. So it really satisfied many of his needs in that he didn't want to give up the asset, i.e. maybe an immediate annuity where you give up control of your assets. But we actually turned this into an income generator for the next 30 years, if it be. And again, if the market goes down the next 30 years, which it won't, he's still guaranteed a paycheck.
So what he had was an asset. He had a life insurance policy that he bought 30 years ago to provide for his family. Unfortunately, the insurance policy never, as we say, matured.
Correct.
And so he had all this cash value into it, and now how do I turn this cash into a lifetime stream of income? And as we know, you have the ability to convert life insurance into an annuity and turn it into a stream of income. The key is the right form of annuity. You know, annuities have gotten a bad rap.
They have, yes.
And the reason being is because they're oftentimes sold in these free lunch and dinner seminars that the products are marginal at best, they pay high commissions, and they're not very good. But there are some good annuity products that can be used in very, very specific situations, and this is one of those cases. So annuities are neither good nor bad. It's the product that you use and the circumstances in which you use them that makes the difference. So that's
and also kudos to this individual, because I have to tell you, he did his homework. Oh, he did his homework.
Must be an engineer.
Yeah. He went out and looked in the marketplace for 6 months, and we came back around, and he said, you know, I just can't beat it. It's, so, again, annuities aren't all bad, but you do have to be careful, because many times there's a free lunch attached, and sometimes that free lunch can cost you thousands, if not more.
Yep.
So,
so we had a call come in at the break we'll get to in just a minute, but once again, if you have any questions regarding your personal finances, Harry and I are here to take your call. We're at 844-220-0965. That's 844-220-0965, or you can text us at 21232. That's 21232. So this call came in and says, is it a good idea to buy E-bonds and convert them to H-bonds? And the answer is, you can no longer do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, back in that rule changed back in several years ago, that you're able to take an E-bond or double E-bond that you defer the taxes on over all those many years, perhaps as much as 30 years, and now you've got a big gain in it. And if you cashed it out, of course, you'd have to pay ordinary income on it. So the strategy back then was to convert it into double H bond, take all that gain and all that, the principal and all the gain, and convert a double H bond that paid you income over a 20-year time frame. And once again, principal interest is guaranteed. But the rules change. back, I think, in 2004, that you can no longer do that kind of stuff. So converting E or double E bonds to H or double H bonds is no longer a viable solution.
And so, you stick with the E bonds?
Well, yeah, you can. You don't want to cash them out necessarily prematurely. Of course, after 30 years, they no longer pay interest. So you want to go to the website. Treasury Department has a website. You can punch in the serial numbers and find out exactly what your bonds are worth and exactly when they mature. And holding them any longer than they mature doesn't give you any more income, so or any other gain.
And I believe some banks are friendly. They'll do that for you at times as well.
Not like they used to. No. Banks are not so friendly anymore. Banks are not so friendly anymore. They want you to go put your card in the wall and leave me alone.
and they want you to put in the wall. I drove up to my bank yesterday or the other day, and they closed the drive-through. Said, we're not doing drive-through anymore. You have to come in.
Whoa.
I couldn't believe that.
Really?
I said, you've got to be kidding me. So, yeah. But
so one of the things that we often get questions about is an inherited IRA, and one of the things that many children or beneficiaries don't realize, I'm talking about non-spouses in the case, is, okay, what if I inherit my IRA from my dad or my uncle or my mother? You know, what are my choices? Well, your choices are is to cash it out and pay all the taxes, or you can defer it up to 5 years, or do what we call as a stretch IRA. And you got to be very, very careful how you do the stretch IRA, because if you do it the wrong way, you've blown the whole deal. But the idea behind a stretch IRA is to continue the tax deferral and take it out over your life expectancy, which allows the money to continue to compound and grow on a tax-deferred basis, and it grows a lot faster. One of the mistakes we oftentimes see, though, Harry, is that folks will name a trust as a beneficiary of their IRA, which is not a bad idea, assuming the trust has been written appropriately. And not all trusts are the same. So if you have a trust as your beneficiary, you want to get back to your attorney and find out if it's what we call a see-through or look-through trust. Now, we're not attorneys, but we know enough about those kinds of things that to caution our clients that you want to go back to your attorney who drafted your trust, and if you've named your IRA the beneficiary of the trust, you want to be sure that it's done appropriately. Otherwise, you've missed perhaps the opportunity to have a stretch IRA for several beneficiaries. So that's one of the things that we look at as well.
And as far as the distribution goes, assuming you inherited that IRA, you do need to pull money out each and every year going forward.
Mm-hmm.
That is mandatory.
Yep.
However, it's at your life expectancy, not at the deceased life expectancy, which in many cases is older. So as you inherit that, that's the good news. The bad news is whether you need the income or not, you must, if you're deferring, you must make an annual distribution, and it's based on life expectancy.
And the mistake we see is the inherited IRA, oftentimes they cash it out with the idea, well, I have 60 days.
Mm.
You know, I'm going to get the check and I have 60 days to put it into another IRA, or better yet, roll it into my IRA. It's got to be what we call a beneficiary IRA. It's got to remain separate and distinct. And you can't roll mom and dad's IRA in the same IRA. They have to be separate IRAs, IRAs.
And also make sure that you have a beneficiary designated. I just had a case where the client's inherited money from an aunt that had no beneficiary, died intestate, and what a mess.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what a mess.
Yes.
And they didn't have the option.
Mm-hmm.
They basically have 5 years to pull all the money out, and it's substantial.
Mm-hmm.
And they were wondering if there's any way to not do that.
Yep.
And the answer is no.
No.
Because
once, so
there was a situation where Aunt didn't do a very good job of planning, estate planning. So make sure you at least have a will, and also make sure that you have beneficiaries listed on your 401ks, your IRAs, your Roths, your annuities, your life insurance policies. Make sure that those are up to date and you're comfortable with who you've named.
Right.
And as Joe said earlier, we typically like to have individuals as the beneficiaries versus trust. A lot of people say, well, I'm going to do a trust and then I'm going to make that the primary beneficiary. That can open up a can of worms, as you said, if it's not properly executed.
Yeah, the thing is everybody wants to avoid probate, and the way you avoid probate is to have the appropriate beneficiaries named and to have joint ownership on your assets. But what you don't want to do is put your kids' names on those assets, because then they become subject to claims of creditors, and heaven forbid the kids get divorced, and now those assets are part of the estate, and they also lose a step-up in basis. And people think they're cute, you know, I'm going to put my kid's name on the deed, you know,
to avoid
probate. What a mistake. So you don't want to do that. There are ways around that. So see a qualified estate planning attorney to guide you through that stuff. The do-it-yourself stuff generally doesn't work. And you don't know it doesn't work until it's too late. You know, you're in the ground and you can't go back and fix it.
Right. Well, as I tell clients, you could go on the internet and do your own will. However, it's kind of like the fire extinguisher on the wall. I think we've used this example. You want to make sure that when you need it, it works. Same way with wills and trust. When it's time, you want to make sure that you have taken the appropriate steps to make it easier on your loved ones, because it can get very, very complicated and very, very messy at times. So, again, make sure that you've done your due diligence and your beneficiaries are up to date.
And one of the ways that when we set up investment accounts for our clients, let's say your mom is a sole survivor and all the assets in her name, and she wants the assets to pass on to her children, she doesn't want to go through a trust. The best way to do that is what we call TOD, transfer on death. It avoids probate, goes directly into the kids. Simple dimple, very easily done. You don't even need to get an attorney involved. You just designate who those beneficiaries are. And as Harry said, when you pass on, it is what it is. So if you've had a falling out with some of the beneficiaries, you want to be sure that you get that straightened out before you do pass on. And one of the worst things that we see is that husband passes away and he forgot to change the beneficiary to the new wife, and the old wife is the beneficiary of the 401k or the IRA or whatever it might be, or the annuity or the life insurance policy. So,
and that could get messy.
That does get messy. Yes, it does.
Very messy.
Without question. So those are the things that you want to be looking. Those are the things that we look at when we do financial planning for clients. As Harry said in the top of the hour when we first got on the program, this is what we do for our clients day in and day out. We do our financial planning for a fee. We offer a complimentary consultation. We'll look at where you are today and where you hope to be in coming years. We make some reasonable assumptions and show you what you need to do now so you don't look back 5 or 10 years from now and say, gee, I wish I'd have known, or gee, I'm sorry I did that because I didn't know any better. And that's what we do as certified financial planners, and we're very, very proud of it. We've been doing it for a number of years. We have probably the oldest and largest independent firm here in Central Florida with almost a dozen certified financial planners under one roof. Makes us, I think, somewhat unique. So if you have any questions about your personal finances, we look forward to having you go to our website. That's financialgroup.com. That's financialgroup.com. You can learn all about Harry and me and the other CFPs that work with us. And if you want any questions answered right now, the good news for you is the lines are still wide open. You can call us at 844-220-0965. That's 844-220-0965. Or text us at 212-32. That's 212-32.
Welcome to the last segment of the On the Money Show, the Certified Financial Group with Harry and Joe. And Joe.
That's us.
Joanna had a TOD question. Call back, Joanna.
Uh-oh. Well, did we lose her?
Well, she had a TOD question. Let's talk about TOD and see if we can answer her question. TOD stands for Transfer on Death. It's how you register investment accounts as opposed to POD. POD is Pay on Death, which is generally what you do with bank accounts, and it's a way to avoid probate. We do that for our clients, right, Harry?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's different than putting, again, as Joe talked about, that's different than putting your son or your daughter on the account. It's a payable on death. So you are the owner. You own the asset. Your child or niece or nephew is not an owner of that account. So there's sometimes some concern that says, well, I don't want them to have access to my money. They don't. It's your account. However, at death, it does avoid probate and passes on to the named individual.
Plus, that named individual gets what we call a step-up in basis, which is the very sweetest part about inheriting money. Many people think, I'm going to get this money, I got to pay taxes and all this stuff. What's a step-up in basis mean?
Basically, if you have an asset and it was purchased at an individual's lifetime, maybe in 1970, and example of they bought Apple stock when it came out at $37 a share, I think. Apple stock $37 a share, and they pass on, and it's now worth $137 a share. It's more than that. I think it's $175 a share.
Tell you a minute.
So now we have a situation where if there was not a step-up in basis, you would have to pay the gains between the $37 and the $137 that the cost, the price of the stock was on the date of death. However, with the step up in basis, you have a situation where we value the asset at the date of death. You can continue to hold the asset. You don't have to sell it. But let's say it goes from 137 to 150, and then you decide to sell it. You don't have to pay the gain from $37 a share. You pay the gain from 137 to the 150. That is a substantial, substantial tax savings using the step-up in basis, which many people mess up. So that is a substantial.
And that's what you lose when you put your kids' names on the account. You lose that step-up in basis. So you want to be careful about doing that. You think you're being cute, I can avoid probate, or I, you know, put my kids in control of that stuff this way if something happens to me. That's why you need what we call a durable power of attorney. That's a very, very powerful tool, particularly if mom is left by herself.
Mm-hmm.
We counsel our clients an awful lot when you're dealing with a widow or a widower that, you know, I've got my assets here, but what happens if I have to go in the nursing home or I, you know, I have a stroke and they have, my bills have to be paid and life goes on? Who's going to handle that for me? Well, what you don't want to do is put your kids' names on the bank accounts. That's why you want to have what's called a durable power of attorney. See an attorney, have that set up. Very, very inexpensive document, but it gives that person the right to manage your affairs. And we recommend our clients do that as well. So there's some of those things that we look at as certified financial planners. We're more than just investing your money, although we do that an awful lot for our clients. But we take a step back and look at what you need to do now to be prepared for the rest of your life, what you need to do so you don't look back, as I say, 5 or 10 years from now and say, gee, I wish I'd have known, or gee, I'm sorry I did this or that. And so we do this for a fee day in and day out as certified financial planners. If you have any questions or want more information about what we do as certified financial planners, all you have to do is go to our website. That's financialgroup.com, financialgroup.com. You can learn about Harry and me and the other certified financial planners that work there, and we'd be glad to answer your questions. We offer a no-obligation visit. How's that work?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Joe. We have you come in, and it's a confidential meeting that we have. We can get as specific as you'd like or as generic as you'd like. It's an opportunity for us to get to meet you, answer your questions. At the end of the hour, we'll make a recommendation how we may be able to help you. Maybe not now. Maybe it's in the future, but at least you might get the ball rolling. And it's a very, very nice way of taking a look at your financial world, all aspects of it. I mean, we'll look into your auto insurance, your umbrella policy, your investments, your life insurance. And at the end of the hour, we'll make a recommendation, say, you know, we suggest that you do a financial plan, and this is what it will cost you. And then if you're interested in hiring us to manage your assets, we'll do that as well. So the consultation is the way to begin. It's a very, very nice, low-key, come into our office, have a cup of coffee, and an hour later, you'll have a lot of information.
And that Apple stock you bought for $37 years ago closed Friday at $1.88.
There you go.
There.
Okay.
There you go.
So.
All right. Carlton, good job, buddy.
Carlton,
you,
right. You have a good weekend.